divorce. Even thinking about getting a divorce can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker. Today, we're talking about the dangers of dying during or after your divorce. Now, one approach to that topic would be, well, who cares? Because I'll be gone, and what do I have to worry about? And that might be true, but your death could have very significant impacts on your loved ones who are already dealing with the stress of changing family circumstances. You might also discount this worry as being not a very real concern because the chances of it happening anytime soon seem pretty remote. And that also may be true, but you know, those are the statistics, and it could still happen to you. And the third point you might think about is, well, I didn't have a will before, so why do I need one now? And none of us like to think about our death. But it is something that we do need to do, and especially with divorce. Chances are your spouse was your executor, your trustee, your power of attorney, and your beneficiary. And if you don't do anything, your ex could still be all of these, and that could mean trouble and certainly unintended consequences. So joining me today is Martha Hartney. Martha is an estate planning attorney with Hartney Law in Boulder, Colorado. Welcome, Martha.
Thank you. Thank you, Mandy, for having me.
Well, I'm so glad you're here today.
I'm also a divorced mother of two myself.
Right. So you have firsthand experience of dealing with all of these changes.
I sure do. I sure do. There are issues to consider before divorce, during divorce, and of course, probably most commonly addressed after divorce,
right?
When it comes to estate planning and death and disability.
So let's start with, let's say I know that I want to end my marriage, or my marriage is ending. I haven't had the conversation with my spouse yet. Is there anything I should be doing now? Should I be, for example, making a list of all the accounts that have beneficiary designations on them and starting to think how I want those changed?
Yes, but you can't necessarily change things.
Right.
Once a dissolution action has begun, I'm sure you're aware of the temporary restraining order under our state statute. I think it's 1410-107. Tells us that we can't do anything material with our assets except for to pay routine expenses while a divorce is pending. And that does include a lot of things having to do with estate planning. There's also a lot of misconceptions about what that doesn't include. But the big note here is, if we know that a divorce is going to take a long time, it's going to be a protracted proceeding, it's something that actually should be thought through.
But if I haven't filed for divorce yet, am I free to go ahead and change things?
Yes, to some degree. One thing, if you know you're going to get divorced and you haven't filed yet, there isn't a temporary restraining order on the assets. So there might be an opportunity to make some changes there. A court would, of course, look at that and say that, you know, I don't agree with that, and therefore I don't want, you know, I'm going to rescind that under a court order. But designated beneficiaries could be changed before the pendency of a divorce began, for like bank accounts and brokerage accounts. Usually what people's main asset is their home. There's not a lot you can do about that
right. While
you are working out your divorce settlement. So a lot of people are just kind of stuck with that. But one thing you can't change is your life insurance designated beneficiaries. Don't change those. The other issue is that while we're going through a divorce, our spouse is still our heir and may serve in priority for those jobs that you had talked about as a personal representative or executor, as an agent under a power of attorney, as a medical decision maker, And if we're already estranged, those are some things that you can change. Dispositions of property.
So you can go ahead and start making those changes. You don't have to wait for those.
Yeah, so long as you don't disinherit your spouse under what's called the elective share, we can't under disinherit our spouse. Our spouses actually have a right to inherit from us. Because if we marry somebody, we also marry the obligation to care for and support them even after death. But during a divorce, we may not want them to serve in those positions of decision-making.
Right.
Those can change. That is not a disposition for the purposes of separation of marital property.
Okay.
It's just changing who was going to act and make decisions for us. That can be done. Especially if there's an estrangement or some danger going on, I would definitely do that.
Right, and I think the
domestic violence, absolutely.
Yeah, and I've had clients where they've separated or know that their marriage is over, but it takes them even 18 months to years before they file for divorce. So that sounds like that's a really good situation where you would want to move ahead and change who the person is who could make healthcare decisions for you in the event that you became very ill.
Right. Yes, you can. You definitely can do that. For long protracted proceedings, I would seek, as part of your team, an estate planner who's familiar with divorce.
Right.
Not all estate planners know how to handle divorce proceedings. And be very honest with them. Tell them what's going on in advance. I have been approached by people who just didn't disclose to me that they were getting ready to get divorced,
right,
and would want me to disinherit their spouse. And I can't really help out in that situation. But if someone discloses their plan to get a divorce, you know, I can advise much more clearly about how to make sure you don't run afoul of all of these rules of not
right.
disinheriting your spouse and not disposing of marital property. We don't want you to do that. That would not look good on your part.
Right. So, and Martha, I know that you're based here in Boulder, but what we're talking about, would that apply? I mean, I understand that there's probably differences between states, but generally speaking, if you're in the U.S., would these, what we're talking about here, apply to you? Or are the rules very different between the states?
They're different from state to state, and it's based on the Dissolution of Marriage Act of that state, whatever that state says. I have heard of other countries, and I'm trying to think if I heard of another state. Yeah, I believe it was a state in which once the divorce proceeding is filed, then the spouse is no longer allowed to serve, but not in Colorado.
Okay.
It's the other way around.
Right.
So it doesn't vary from state to state. You do need to check with a local practitioner.
Right. So all listeners, as the taking this in, they're going to have to go find somebody locally. I have a question I'm sure that you've been asked a million times. This whole thing about your spouse inheriting from you. Doesn't the divorce decree take care of all of that? Why would I need a new will or change beneficiary designations? If we're no longer spouses, then doesn't the decree say that? And couldn't you use that to make sure that they don't inherit your money?
Yes, yes. So there is a rule that says that as soon as the order for dissolution is signed by the judge, your spouse is no longer your heir. It's as if they were struck from your estate planning documents if you have them.
Sounds such like terrible language. Struck from.
Struck from. It's like they predecease you. So they're no longer part of your life. That doesn't mean, though, that there aren't places and ways in which they can get a foothold in your estate if you are disabled or if you die, even after divorce. So here's a common one. You have minor children. If you have minor children, your children remain your heirs, and your children's other parent is their legal representative along with you if you share custody and decision making.
Right.
So I did see a case last year in which a gentleman I knew passed away, and he and his ex-wife were highly estranged, very contentious, almost to the point of terrible fear on his part, and he was in the hospital dying, and she insisted on seeing him, and they actually had to get police in to keep her out. She was insisting on the basis of being the child's mother, and they had to get the police to help keep her out, and she's actually now the personal representative of his estate.
Because
he's a legal representative of the child.
Wow.
And he did not plan.
Wow.
And he would just be astonished that that is actually the end result of his failure to plan post-divorce.
Right.
So we do have to think about that.
And
necessarily.
Yeah, and I had, in my previous career in financial services, I'd run into situations where this was an annuity company, and we'd have a beneficiary designation that named the person, let's say John Smith. John Smith was Jane Smith's husband, but they'd gotten divorced, so he was no longer their husband, but because he was designated beneficiary by his name specifically and not spouse, that created a problem with paying out the death benefit, and it was disputed as to who should receive the death benefit then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's important to go back to our transfer on death and pay on death beneficiaries of all of our accounts and make sure we reframe those. Some of them are, if you leave your ex on there, there's a question about whether or not they're entitled to it. They might be entitled to it.
Right.
So then we're actually just opening up litigation.
Right.
When I got divorced, I specifically went back to my ex and said, you need to take me off of all of your accounts as a designated beneficiary. He had not done it. And we had been divorced for several years. And thank goodness I knew to tell him that. I don't want to inherit from him inadvertently. That's not what the result is that either of us want.
Right. I'm sure that there are some exes who would still like to inherit from their former spouse, but you have your professional knowledge there and sharing that with your ex. I have another question for you. It's let's talk guardianship. While you're married, if you had an estate plan, then you probably designated someone with your spouse who you both agreed on that would raise your children in the event that both you and your spouse passed away. Now, after divorce, obviously that guardian role would only kick in if both of you had passed away, and the chances of that happening are reduced after divorce, but it could still happen. So is guardianship for your children something that you still need to discuss with your ex? Or discuss with them during divorce? Can you both designate somebody to be a guardian, knowing that the other person will have passed away before you if that guardian role was to step in?
I would love for divorce attorneys to actually raise this issue with their clients, because the vast majority of people actually never do their guardianship nomination.
Yeah.
So great timing. Why don't we talk about it now? Frequently, I found that people actually couldn't even agree in the first place who the guardian should be. So one principle is that if we have two functioning parents and one passes away, the other parent is going to be the parenting parent, period. That's the end of the story. If that parent passes away, then we need a guardian.
Right.
And each parent has the right to nominate their successor. If they conflict, we actually have a statute that tells us what to do. If we have two guardianship nominations that are active, we look at the guardianship nomination of the person who died most recently. Okay, so we actually have an order of priority there. Even though there's no such order of priority to serve as a guardian in general, in terms of the mother or the father, whoever died last is the one whose guardianship nomination is up first. And another thing that we really should talk about in the divorce setting is what happens if a spouse dies. How are we going to ensure that the members of the other parent's family are permitted visitation and or prohibited visitation?
I'm going to stop you right there. We're going to come back for the answer to that. But first, I would like to remind our listeners that I'm Mandy Walker. You're listening to Conversations About Divorce. And today we're talking about estate planning, how to make sure that your ex doesn't inherit your assets, and a whole other load of questions here. My guest today is Martha Hartney with Hartney Law. And Martha, you have a free download that you wanted to share with our listeners.
Yes, we do. We have 10 tips for when you're going through the worst part of life. For anybody who would like it, you can go to our website. It's www.hartneylaw, that's H-A-R-T-N as in Nancy, E-Y, law.com/divorce. So there's 10 tips there that you can download, things to watch out for, and raise with your divorce attorney if you are represented.
Great. I'm going to go and take a look at those too. So before we broke for our break, you were talking about a guardianship situation where one spouse passes away, and then how do you make sure that that spouse's extended family, the children still have access to that extended family?
Yeah, it was such a common phenomenon when we lost, when a child lost one parent, that the survivor refused to allow that child visitation with family members. That
really?
Virtually every state ended up passing a grandparent visitation statute that permits grandparents to request visitation with grandchildren under certain circumstances. And they are the only party that actually has any right at all to request visitation with children under some circumstance. And it's usually a death of their child, and then their child's children's other parent is refusing to allow visitation. So there's a whole statute about it, and it's basically, is it in the child's best interest for them to have a relationship with their grandparent? One thing that other members of the family too, we should consider this. There may be people, we absolutely want our children to be in relationship. We need to document that. We need to put it in writing so the court can look at that and see what you wanted before anything bad happens. The converse is also true. We need to tell a court who should our children not be in relationship with. There are lots and lots and lots of people who have family members and relatives that are a danger to their children. We have got to tell courts that these people exist and are in our children's lives. And then the state planning attorney should be able to help you tee that up so the court can figure out who's who and what's going on if you were to pass away and not be able to speak.
Right. Wow. So do you have a sense of how often do these issues come up for couples?
You mean in the while they're getting a divorce or
post-divorce?
I probably see it more often than what I do for a living.
Right.
But I've actually seen, in my 6 years of practicing, I have seen or heard of 5 different couples in which both spouses died after divorce, leaving minor children or newly minted adults behind. And 5 times.
Wow.
In our area, which is kind of astonishing. I would have thought that it would be extremely rare, but, I have seen it myself. So we do need to think about it. People do pass away. We just lost 2 members of our community, tragically in an accident last weekend. A young couple, they weren't married and didn't have kids, but it happens. We do need to think about the possibility of what happens to our children if we're not here.
Right.
Even after we die.
Right.
After we divorce. Yeah.
Right. So maybe this is an easy question for you. What happens if you have shared parenting with your former spouse and that person passes away before your child reaches adulthood? Does that just automatically mean that you become sole decision maker and sole parenting time? Do you have to file something with the court?
No, that's automatic. You don't have to do anything. That parent is automatically the full custodial parent legally.
Right. Right.
So there's nothing, and very little can actually interfere with that. With it, we would be into a dependency neglect case before,
right.
That parent's rights would be interfered with in any
way. Okay.
I get a lot of a lot of single people who want to ensure that their children never see the other parent again because that other parent is in prison or is a danger, or is violent or whatever. And that's very dicey, but it happens all the time. And it's frequently a mom who is left raising a child alone, and the dad is not in the picture for all of those reasons. There are very limited things we can do, but you definitely need some legal advice on that.
Right.
Short of terminating parental rights, there is a risk that a child could go into the care of a violent offender.
Yeah.
But it's there.
So let's talk about child support and spousal support, because those come up a lot in divorce settlements, and they're promises of future income. So if a former spouse was to die after the divorce, but while those things were still payable, it could mean that that income stream disappears. Mm-hmm. And I know a common practice is to take out life insurance on that person's life, so the death benefit would cover the amount of the support that in a lump sum that would be owed. And that seems like it's pretty straightforward, but doesn't that get complicated with the beneficiary designation? I've been in mediations where people are saying, okay, well, we'll just put down the beneficiary of the life insurance as the minor child.
Don't do that.
Well, because they're feeling like under pressure to make a decision, and they wanted, you know, okay, we've got to do this now. So it's like, well, the money's really for the child's upkeep, so I'll just put the child's name down.
No, don't put the child's name down. That's afterwards it happens. In fact, life insurance companies won't write the check to a minor child.
Okay.
They'll tell the minor child's other parent, go get a conservatorship, and I'll write the check to the conservator.
Right.
They will not write a check to a minor. So that's a huge error. I'm really trying to educate divorce attorneys about this. But one of the other issues is that most divorces are done pro se.
Yeah. Pro se means without having legal representation.
Right. And if you don't have a lawyer, you're not even going to think about this insurance issue. So just to tee that up a little bit, when there's alimony or remaining property division and child support, when parties are represented, frequently their attorneys will insert a clause that says that requires the paying party to maintain a life insurance policy. And they'll even have to offer proof of that during the divorce proceeding to cover remaining alimony, remaining property division, if there is any. Sometimes those linger on a little bit, and also child support. So I'm not so much concerned about a life insurance policy that's payable for alimony or property division. That's the entitlement of the other party.
Right.
So the issue with having life insurance payable to the other parent to satisfy a child support obligation is that the child support obligation is really for the child's benefit. And there's no safeguards in place that once a life insurance payment is made to the surviving parent, that actually is used for the child.
Right.
Who knows what they're going to do with it? A friend of mine was a client, and her divorce agreement had this clause in it, and her divorce attorney and I conferred about this. We did not want her life insurance payable to her ex because there was ample, overwhelming evidence that the ex would not use it properly. And we decided that we would instead filter the life insurance policy through her revocable living trust estate plan. And then we decided that if we had to go explain it to a judge what we had done, that we would be able to look the judge straight in the face and tell him why. And that would be because the former spouse was going to be a spendthrift and lose it. So my request of divorce attorneys has been, if you're doing this life insurance clause, paying child support to an ex, at least make sure that it's permitted to go through a trust rather than be payable to the ex-spouse.
Okay.
Where there's someone else who's the gatekeeper, someone else who's actually writing a check once a month to the ex-spouse the way it's supposed to be done, rather than a lump sum payment direct to the spouse with no oversight.
Right. Right.
Okay.
So that's a good solution. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So everything that we've talked about makes perfect sense. And you've made very compelling arguments to make sure that people do have an estate plan and they keep it updated. But you and I both know that people don't.
Right.
And I think you said that, the ostrich pad, you said that at the very beginning. What is the most common reason that you've found for people not doing this?
It's the ostrich thing. It's, I don't want to look. And especially for somebody who's been through a divorce, they are already taxed and overwhelmed to the max. I have done as much as I possibly can. I can't think about this stuff anymore. I'm not going to deal with this right now. I would actually suggest that if you find a real attorney, they can make it easy enough to get through, and that a divorce really isn't final until we finished this thing, this last piece.
So we all need to be kind of like creating the mindset from the very beginning of the divorce. The divorce decree is not the end of the divorce process. It's when you've got all of your estate planning documents tied up and your beneficiary designations and the durable power of attorney reworded, all of that is when the work is complete.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I know that one of the obstacles I had when I was getting divorced was I didn't know who to designate. I have absolutely no family in this country. And that it just for a long time that really just stymied me. I it's like, who on earth do I ask?
Mm-hmm. In all those different roles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you suggest?
Well, there are professionals who can serve in those roles, but actually the best thing is friends.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that a person going through a divorce needs the most of. And, we consider the act of acquiring and nurturing friendships part of our sacred job. We're surrounding our children and ourselves with our found family. So that can take a while, especially if we're healing from divorce, but there's probably nothing better that you can do for yourself than go out and meet other women and other men with the same interests and just nurture and cultivate a new tribe. It takes time, I know. But in the meantime, you could name some professional. There are professional fiduciaries who do this. You could first sort of reach out into your extended family.
Right.
It's rare, but we have had people who are just like, I just don't have friends. I'm an introvert. I don't have a lot of friends. It's painful for me to go make friends, and yet that is just something we have to do.
Right. I did end up asking my really good friend back in England if she would be my executor should the worst come to the worst, and she did agree. And I ended up, writing her a little document about who to go talk to and set things up here so that there would be other people here that could take care of some of the day-to-day stuff. And now my daughter's 21. I have her designated. So I know what it's like to kind of try and think, I know I need to do this, but I don't know who to ask.
Yeah, it's nice when the kids get old enough.
Yeah.
It's also a place where if you have more than one child, that can cause more problems.
Yes. Yes. What about, is there a threshold, a dollar threshold where, if you know that you have less than X thousand dollars in your estate, is this something that you just don't need to worry about?
No, because every adult in America needs the five basic documents, even if you're dead broke, even if you owe more money than you have. The five are a basic will. Everyone needs a basic will, a healthcare power of attorney, a living will, which is an advanced healthcare directive. We call it the directive. I'm trying to retrain people to not call it a living will, because it's a directive to physicians. So a financial power of attorney, and a HIPAA release that allows your healthcare agents to actually speak to your doctors and medical professionals. So those five documents every adult needs, even if you don't have any money. Those, for folks who actually have more debt than assets, it's probably a good idea to acquire something online. There are some like relatively okay drafting services. LegalZoom and Rocket Lawyer are the two prominent ones. That's for people who simply can't afford a lawyer. People who have more than $100,000 saved up, you gotta get a lawyer. There's just no doubt about it. At that level, A, you can afford the professional advice and there's really no financial excuse. And B, you actually have a lot more risk.
And
your assets could be chewed up very quickly in court proceedings at death or disability.
Right.
So that's just the reality. I would say at $100,000, be hiring an attorney. Between zero and $100,000, you might be able to get through the night with some planning from one of the online drafting services.
Okay. That's a really helpful, Martha. And listeners, my guest today was attorney Martha Hartney. You can check out the resources section on Martha's website, hartneylaw.com. She has a library of videos which will help you understand more about the estate planning process. And Martha, one more time, the free download for our listeners.
It's at hartneylaw.com/divorce. And Hartney is spelled H-A-R-T-N-E-Y.
And that's 10 tips for going through the worst time of your life, did you say?
Yep, that's right. 10 tips for when you're going through the worst time of your life.
Right. And this is my message to you today, is that really to think in terms like Martha and I were talking about earlier, that your divorce is not complete until you have updated your estate plan. And you need to do this work to finish untangling your affairs from your exes and to protect your assets and your children. Do use a professional to help you. They can help you figure out why you may be procrastinating, and they'll be able to brainstorm solutions with you so that you can get this done.
There is nothing more powerful than knowledge and good advice.
So thank you for listening today. I'm Mandy Walker. You'll find a wealth of divorce-related information at my website, sincemydivorce.com, including a free audio download on what you need to know about divorce preparations. It's under the free stuff, and I'll include a link to that in the show description. You can also follow me as Since My Divorce on Twitter and Facebook. And I hope you'll join us again next time for more conversations about divorce.